How's it going, everybody? This is episode 108 of the Sound Off here on SEScoops.com. I am the Solomonster, and it is Sunday, May 2nd, 2010. Thank you guys so much, as always, for downloading the podcast. Big weekend, lots of different things to get to. Want to kick things off here with episode 108 by giving a shout-out to one of our longtime listeners. Something very cool happened last night. Now, I mentioned at the end of the podcast last week on episode 107, gave a shout-out to a friend of mine who was making his in-ring debut for one Johnny Rods in his World of Unpredictable Wrestling in Brooklyn, New York, at the world-famous Gleason's Gym. That show was last night. I was there to support my buddy as he being Amish cousin Simon, made his debut with his partner, Amish cousin Cyrus. Wasn't a tag match, but they were working together in a battle royal and had a great comedy match, one of the big hits of the night. One of the more unexpected hits of the night came at the beginning of the show. Now, just so you know, when I mentioned this on the show last week, I got a message from one of our longtime listeners, Mr. James Alexander, who I know is listening right now. I want to give him a shout-out and a big thank you. At the beginning of the show, he really put the sound off over in front of the audience at the show very strongly. I was unexpectedly, this was a secret conspiracy that was put together shortly before showtime, unbeknownst to me, a little angle at the beginning of the show, and I got called into the ring, so I had the opportunity to be given an open mic in front of the audience to talk about the sound off and pretty much anything I damn well wanted to. And I just want to thank James for the opportunity. It was really a lot of fun to get in the ring and to be able to do that. And again, it really just makes me happy when I get emails and Twitter comments or what have you from people who just genuinely enjoy downloading this show every week and just listening to it for an hour or 90 minutes or what have you. And the way everything came together last night, again, with the promo at the beginning of the show, which was quite unexpected, I just really want to voice my appreciation here on the air. And for that matter, the action all night was really good. I had a good time last night. It was a long show, but lots of entertaining characters. You know, it's a family-friendly show. A lot of family and friends there for many of the wrestlers. Apparently Matt Stryker was there last night. I didn't have an opportunity to meet him. From what I understand, and I didn't realize this before last night, he is an alum of one Johnny Rods, and so I guess he stops in every now and then, so that was kind of cool. And, yeah, good times. My buddy, unfortunately, did not win the Battle Royal, but there is hope for next time. And as a matter of fact, their next big show, I believe, is on Saturday, May 22nd. It's actually going to be taking place in the city this time, not Brooklyn. I don't know the exact location. I'll have to find out. But, yeah, if you haven't been to a WUW show, check it out. And for that matter, any indie show in your area, that could be a lot of fun. So definitely show your support that way. And thanks again to James and the gang there for showing their support of the Sound Off. Now, for the record, when I mentioned this on Twitter, yes, I was given the what treatment. Because you guys know more than anybody how much I love that chant. And, yeah. Poetic justice for yours truly to be whatted out of the ring last night. Very entertaining. Actually, I have to say the entire opening angle was quite genius. I had no idea what was going on. And I heard my name mentioned and then got wind of what was going on. And really the genesis of it was Amish cousin Cyrus has been walking around for quite some time with a petition. What is this petition for, you might ask? Well, this petition is to allow Cyrus to wrestle a duck, because you see he is a duck-churning champion in Amish country, I don't know. He desperately wants to wrestle, I guess, the Aflac duck, something resembling the Aflac duck. And Mr. Alexander would only agree to sign the petition if the Solomonster was brought into the ring, and so that kind of is where it went from there. Just to give you some background on exactly why I was called into the ring. Hopefully Cyrus will get to wrestle that duck, or else everything in that opening segment was for naught, and that would be TNA level booking, and I know WUW books far better than TNA does. So, all right, let's get right into it here. I did not see the Extreme Rules pay-per-view live. I have since seen clips and highlights of it and read the reviews, and by and large, it sounded like a good show at best, maybe even quite good. Not a terribly earth-shattering show. I know a lot of people were pretty pissed off at the outcome of the John Cena Batista main event, a last man standing match ends with Batista having his feet duct taped together so he can't stand up. Not my favorite finish in the world, but they have to drag this program out for another month. Batista is going to be leaving the company, most likely, unless he changes his mind. I believe he's on the booking sheets through June for house shows, but I believe the Over the Limit pay-per-view on May 23rd, when he has his rematch with Cena, will likely be his big send-off, so we'll see, unless he changes his mind. But Batista, unfortunately, on his way out of the company. Now, Raw Monday Night was the big show, the three-hour draft. You know my thoughts on this whole draft business every year. It's comical, the way they try to make it feel as though the draft is newsworthy, and it is for the wrestlers. Nobody likes being drafted, for example, from one brand to the other and being taken away from travel partners. That's one of the big things. I know a lot of the wrestlers who have done interviews talking about what the draft means to them. They always mention the fact that it's hard to kind of break up those relationships, and it sucks for them, but let's be honest here, the draft don't mean shit. The draft has not meant shit for a long time. It doesn't mean shit now. And as long as they continue to run their company and the whole nature of the brand split the way they do, it won't mean much anyway. I'm not a big fan of it. You had, in the weeks leading up to the draft, constant mingling of Raw guys on SmackDown, SmackDown guys on Raw. And their argument would be, well, we wanted to just give the fans one last dose before the draft. And after the draft, we're going to keep them separate. I give it 3 months. If that, before a Raw guy shows up on SmackDown or a SmackDown guy shows up on Raw. It's just inevitable. And even if it takes longer than that, it's going to happen, which is why the draft doesn't mean much, which is why bragging rights really doesn't mean much. But that's neither here nor there. We had the draft. It was supposedly a big event, so let's just run through some of these picks. We saw on Monday night Kelly. What a huge first draft pick that was. What a way to start the show. Kelly goes from SmackDown, or rather from Raw to SmackDown. SmackDown needed a face diva. Now they have it. Doesn't really mean much one way or the other. Big Show goes from SmackDown to, I'm sorry, Raw to SmackDown. I got my titles mixed up here. Let's fix this. There we go. Big Show goes from Raw to SmackDown. He's the big smiling babyface challenger now to Jack Swagger. I like Big Show better as a face, just because whenever they book him as a monster heel, it never ends well. So as a face, he's highly entertaining. He's very funny. I personally am waiting with bated breath for his movie, Knucklehead, to come out later this year. It was supposed to come out last month, and unfortunately it got pushed back, I believe, to September or October. But Big Show as a face works for me. Big Show Wrestling Championship main events, not so much. You know, those days are long over. But if you look at the way they gutted that SmackDown brand, Undertaker is part-time, Rey Mysterio's hurting, and he still has his program with CM Punk, there really aren't hardly any other babyfaces to put in that top spot to challenge Jack Swagger, especially when they move people like Morrison and whatnot off the brand. So, you know, they're doing what they have to do. Big Show would not have been my first choice. Actually, I think Miz would have been better off going from Raw to SmackDown, just because on Raw, what is there left for him to do? You know, he's had a feud with John Cena. He basically got squashed. Where else is there for him to go? We'll get to that in a second, though. John Morrison, going from SmackDown to Raw. R-Truth, following suit. So I would imagine the two of them will still do some tag teaming, at least. Edge goes from SmackDown to Raw. Kofi Kingston goes from Raw to SmackDown, which was desperately needed. I think I mentioned that as one of the picks I thought or hoped would happen on the last show. Thankfully, it did. He was so badly bungled, his push was on Raw, that hopefully he can, you almost think like there's no choice for them, but to push Kofi, because who else do they have on that brand? Well, they have MVP. MVP has also moved, but that was part of the, supplemental draft results. We'll get to that in a second. Christian goes from Raw to SmackDown. Of course, Edge goes from SmackDown to Raw. So yet again, Edge and Christian miss each other. I know they had a big segment on SmackDown. I still haven't seen it yet, because I wasn't home, but no matter how good it was, if it was a really good segment or maybe not, just that bit of a tease just pisses me off. I mean, just put the two of them together. Put them in a program, let them do some teaming, and then one turns on the other. I don't know, but we've waited far too long to see Edge and Christian reunited, and they kind of give us that little tease, and then you realize, shit, they're on separate brands. and almost hoping that they will break the brand extension and put one guy on the other brand to kickstart something. But we'll see. And last but not least, on Monday night, we saw Chris Jericho get drafted from SmackDown to Raw. Comical in and of itself for all the time that Jericho said, "You'll never see me again on Raw." Of course, we've seen him a million times since then, and now we're going to be seeing him every single week. Why you would draft Edge and Jericho, by the way, onto the same show is mind-boggling to me, especially when it seems like their program is over. The cage match at Extreme Rules was the blow-off, and now these two guys are moved on to the same brand. I don't get that. To me, it's just even looking at the total results after the supplemental draft, I still don't understand why you move both guys on the same show, but hey, maybe they have a grander plan that we're not aware of. Now, the supplemental draft was supposed to take place on Wednesday, which is normally when it happens. They bumped it up to Tuesday, the very next day, which probably made more sense. And the results go a little something like this. Great Khali and Ranjan Singh go from SmackDown to Raw. Khali's taking time off. He's over in India. So I don't know when is the next time that we would see Khali on TV. Let him stay away as long as he wants to. I am so beyond finished with Khali. What is there left for him to do? He's been a monster heel. He's beaten The Undertaker clean. He was the World Heavyweight Champion. He feuded with Batista. He feuded with Triple H. Feuded with John Cena. Now he's the smiling, comedic babyface. Punjabi playboy. What else is left for him to do? But I guess he got to swap giants. So Big Show goes to SmackDown. Khali goes to Raw. Chavo Guerrero goes from Raw to SmackDown. Don't care. Chavo does nothing for me. Cody Rhodes goes from Raw to SmackDown, which is a move that was desperately needed. They're going to keep Cody away from DiBiase and all those guys. He really should be on another show. I think on SmackDown, he'll have a chance to really break through. It's a shame because they have more heels than babyfaces, and I don't see them turning Cody babyface, but I think he'll do well for himself on Friday nights. Natalya and the Hart Dynasty moving from SmackDown to Raw to make it official. Well, as long as they're unified tag team champions, of course, they could appear on any show they want to, but if Bret Hart's going to stick around a few more weeks and kind of make appearances with the Hart Dynasty, and Bret's not going to be on SmackDown, of course, he'll be on Raw, the A show, it just makes sense to have them on that program. By the way, Bret Hart, he just did an interview up in Canada, and supposedly has claimed that he will be finished with WWE for this run, anyway, as of May 17th. That, of course, I think I mentioned this last week, is the day that Raw comes to Toronto, Canada. So it would be quite appropriate for Bret to come out in his homeland for the first time on TV since he came back in Canada, get a huge pop from the crowd, have that one last big send-off, and ride off into the sunset. So I would imagine that's the plan, but according to Bret Hart, May 17th will be his final date working with WWE. Chris Masters goes from Raw to SmackDown. I guess he can do his little peck dances on Friday nights. I don't really, I don't really think it amounts to much for SmackDown, but maybe they'll turn him heel again. Ezekiel Jackson, who's actually hurt right now, he had suffered a partially torn quad a few weeks ago, so he'll be gone for a few months. When he comes back, he'll be on Raw. I could definitely see them turning him into a monster to challenge Cena for the title. I would not put it past them to kind of strap the rocket to his back and, like I said, challenge Cena for the world title if Cena's still champion. I guess we'll see where they go with him. Goldust goes from, I don't know where Goldust was. I guess he was officially on SmackDown. Now he's on Raw. I know that WWE is planning to release a book in the wintertime that's basically an autobiography on Dustin Runnels, and they'll probably want to do a fair amount of promotion on it, and maybe that's why they put him on Raw. Promoting on SmackDown to them is not a priority. Promoting on Raw, which of course is their main show, is really what they care about. Hornswoggle, the little midget bastard, goes from Raw to SmackDown. This was the pick that I liked the most. I'm sick to death of that little pint-sized prick. Yeah, that's right, I said pint-sized prick. He's been so overexposed, I can't stand a little guy. Put him on SmackDown, keep him there forever. I don't need to see Hornswoggle on Raw anymore. Rosa Mendez goes from SmackDown to Raw, or rather from Raw to SmackDown. Yeah, I honestly thought that she was originally on SmackDown because I just haven't seen her. But apparently she's been drafted to SmackDown, whoop-de-doo. And MVP, as I mentioned earlier, goes from Raw to SmackDown. This is going to be big for MVP. They need to push guys on that show. If they turn him heel, if they keep him face, I don't care. But just do something with the guy. He went to Raw. It was promise at first. He had some really good mic work up against Randy Orton. And then he went nowhere. He's turned into a job guy. And it's a shame because he's much better than that. Is he world championship material? I don't know. I think he has the potential to be. You know, there are certain guys you look at and you just shake your head and go, you know what? This guy's not world championship material. I think MVP could very well be world championship material, but it's going to take a while to rehabilitate all the damage I think that they did to him on Raw. So I, for one, was very happy to see him switch brands. And that was it. That was the supplemental draft. Not exactly the most earth-shattering draft that they've had. There were some moves that I think were made for the better. There were many moves that were made that I don't think are going to amount to shit, quite frankly. You know, you're swapping a couple of divas. You're putting Chavo on the other show, and you're moving Goldust to Raw. It's not going to mean anything at all. But it was a big night in their minds. Obviously, people thought differently. Raw did not do very well on Monday night. They pulled in about a 3.1. I think rounded up, actually, it's a 3.1. Meanwhile, Impact. Oh, Impact. Now, you knew Impact was going to suffer up against a three-hour Raw draft program coming off a pay-per-view. But I don't think that many people thought it would be this bad. And in fact, Impact scored a 0.5 rating, a 0.5 rating last Monday night, the lowest rating for an original episode of Impact ever in the show's history, be it on Monday night, Thursday night, Saturday night. No Impact. First-run Impact has ever performed as poorly in the ratings as this one did on Monday night. Now, yeah, you can blame WWE. Big show, 3 hours. But you know what? There's no reason that with Hulk Hogan, Eric Bischoff, Ric Flair, Sting, Jeff Jarrett, AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, Jeff Hardy, RVD, Kurt Angle, Mr. Anderson, The Pope, Desmond Wolfe, all these different people, the young guys they're pushing, the old guys that have names, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, I could probably add a couple more onto that list. 0.5? A 0.5. And there's something to be said for people rebelling against the older talent. Maybe they don't want to see Kevin Nash on their TV anymore. Maybe they're tired of hearing from Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff every week. The shit, you know, the really shitty part about this, there's a lot of very talented young guys on that show, a lot of TNA originals, who are getting the shaft. People are turning away from the show in droves, and I don't think it's their fault. It's not Samoa Joe's fault. It's not AJ Styles' fault. It's squarely on the people that run TNA because they don't know how to book a wrestling show. They booked a really, really good show the week before. And what did I say? I said, let's wait and see if this is a pattern or if it's just a one-off thing. Now, I don't think Impact was horrible last Monday, but it was definitely a step or two down from what it was the week before. And the fact is that whatever they're doing is simply not working. So, if I had to take a guess, I would say that sooner rather than later, there's a pretty good chance Impact is going to be back on Thursdays. They have an Impact replay in the old time slot that actually outperformed the original airing. I think the replay did a 0.6 or a 0.7. The original airing on Monday did a 0.5. Just amazing, and it really shouldn't be amazing to me, but it is. I think the one good thing that TNA did all week was fired Bubba the Love Sponge. Because Bubba the Love Sponge, of course, is a fucking moron. And deserved to be fired. He should have been fired a long time ago. In fact, he never should have been hired in the first place. But he was on, I think it was Man Cow or some other shock jock show. And basically ambushed Awesome Kong on the air. Called her, you know, some pretty derogatory things. And I guess that was the straw that broke the camel's back. Bubba is gone. Kudos to TNA. But aside from that, they've got some big problems there. Because Spike TV is not going to... If you think that this show is going to get a 0.5 every week, and Spike's going to be okay with that, you are sorely mistaken. There will be a change made if this does not change anytime soon. And there's nothing that would lead me to believe that it will. So I think Impact will be back on Thursdays before long, and maybe it's the best move for them. I said that they should go to Mondays. I agreed with the decision. I thought it was a good move. I thought it would be exciting. January 4th was a fun night to be a wrestling fan. And it hasn't really been all that fun head-to-head since then. Even March 8th, when they went to Monday nights permanently, it just didn't feel as special. It didn't feel as fun. It didn't feel as big as January 4th. The bloom was off the rose. A lot of people tuned into wrestling on January 4th. And obviously, they took a look at what was being offered, and they said, I'm not really interested. And they turned away, and they didn't come back. So this is a problem that TNA has to address. Now, the other big piece of TNA news is former WWE diva Victoria, better known recently in TNA as Tara, the Spider Lady, is apparently on her way out of TNA. In fact, she has confirmed herself that she's on her way out of TNA. She posted a blog on her MySpace page that spread like wildfire. She's very open, very candid, very honest in that particular message as to the problems that she has with TNA management and why she is leaving in 3 weeks. So she's not leaving right away. Her contract runs out in mid-May, I believe. That's when she will officially be gone. And she had some pretty, I don't want to say nasty, I think that's too strong of a word, but basically she felt slighted by their offer or counter-offer to what she wanted to be paid. There were rumors, and she didn't, you know, Lisa, her real name, she didn't address this in her MySpace blog, but there were suggestions that perhaps she was upset that TNA was not going to in some way support her her outside business ventures. I don't know how true that is, but she is, in fact, pissed off at TNA management, unhappy, and leaving the company. Doesn't mean she's coming back to WWE. She's not exactly a spring chicken anymore, let's be honest, and WWE doesn't go around hiring too many women in their late 30s or 40s, which is what Victoria is. But again, it's just one side of the story. You know, there's been a lot of other stories coming out that have suggested that she's been a bit of a diva, quite frankly, behind the scenes. She is used to things being run in a certain way in the WWE locker room, which is very political, and isn't always the most fun place to be in. And yet in TNA, a lot of people say it's a very carefree environment. Everyone's one big happy family, which, of course, look, I'm not backstage at Universal on the lot. I can tell you right now, that's bullshit. But the fact is, there are a lot of people in that company, a lot of the other women, not all of them, but many of them don't necessarily have a lot of good things to say about Victoria, Tara, whatever. And she's on her way out of the company, which is a blow to their Knockouts division. She hasn't exactly been setting my world on fire since she came back there. But she is one of the more experienced wrestlers, if not, quite frankly, the most experienced in that division. You take her out of there. Of course, Gail Kim's been gone for a while. They got rid of Awesome Kong. You have the Beautiful People, who are a very good act. Shitty wrestlers. Angelina Love just got hurt. She's going to be out for a couple of weeks. Not good for the TNA Knockouts division. Now, in the interest of being fair here, for all the bashing of TNA here, for just being stupid in general, I must also take this opportunity to do some WWE bashing as well. Now, a lot of people have been following the Jim Ross situation. Jim Ross, of course, has been off television now for several months after suffering his, I believe, third bout with Bell's palsy many months back. Thankfully, he seems to have gotten that under control. I don't think he's fully recovered. I think if you were to look at his face, you would see he still has some problems, I think, with his right eye. But he sounds fine. Sounds like the Jim Ross of always, in clips that I've heard of him recently. He's been keeping very, very, very busy with Outside Ventures, his website, his barbecue restaurants. He's talking about writing a book or two. And he's dropped a lot of hints that if his WWE career is over, and it may well be, he would love to explore the MMA world. Being an MMA announcer, there's been rumors that he had a meeting not only with Dixie Carter in TNA at the beginning of March, but he's met with officials from HDNet, who, of course, have Ring of Honor programming. They have a lot of MMA programming, a lot of other sports. Jim Ross has many options available to him. And basically what this means is WWE either has not made an offer or has not made an offer that is to Jim Ross's liking. His contract with the company expired on Friday. Now, he is still working for WWE in a backstage capacity. He's been doing payroll, talent payroll now for, I think, over 15 years. He's still doing that for now, but his talent contract has expired and was not renewed. They did not reach an agreement. So Jim Ross is truly done as an on-air persona with WWE, at least until an agreement is reached. It doesn't look like an agreement is going to be reached. I mean, that's my guess. If there was an agreement to be signed, it would have been signed this week. Vince McMahon is of the mindset that Jim Ross's days as an announcer are over, and it's time for the new crew, Michael Cole, who I laugh, you know, that they would be considered the new and youthful crew, Matt Stryker, Todd Grisham. All due respect to those guys, they do not compare. I mean, I can't even come up with an analogy here. Jim Ross is type A, and then there's everybody else. You don't need me to tell you that, of course. The fact that Jim Ross was relegated to a fucking suite up in the fucking skybox section at WrestleMania when he could have been and should have been at ringside calling Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker or Bret Hart and Vince McMahon is a slap in the face. The fact that Jim Ross was not allowed to ride on the bus with talent and instead was relegated to the family and friends bus when he was in Phoenix for WrestleMania is a slap in the face. And he, you know, he drops these very cryptic messages on his Twitter page and his blog, but he still maintains a very professional demeanor. He's not going to go off and start bashing the company. You know, he's a company guy. He'll take it on the chin. He'll put a smile on his face and he'll move on. And you know what? Good for him. But it's obvious to me that he's very, very upset about how this all went down. And I don't blame him. I mean, here you have the greatest announcer in the history of the business, and this is how you treat the guy. You don't even give him a proper send-off on TV. Really? You know, Vince McMahon is derided by people many times as being this callous, evil person. And then you'll always have somebody else say, well, Vince is actually a really nice guy. Does a lot of charity work that people don't know about, and he's actually a pretty decent dude. You know, that may well be, but I look at Jim Ross, who's been an employee of that company off and on, but for the most part on, since 1993. From the moment he walked out in fucking Caesar's Palace wearing a toga, that should have told him this is going to be a bumpy ride. But he parlayed that into the most successful announcing career in the history of the business, and I just don't understand. You know, I don't want to say that Vince hates him, because I don't think Vince McMahon does hate Jim Ross. I really don't. I think he likes him. But there's just something that he always... It's just so... It's hard to put into words. I don't want to say that he kind of takes things out on him. Although, it is quite known, you know, that back in the day when Ross would be in those creative meetings and business meetings with Vince and everybody else, Vince would kind of bust his chops and push his buttons. I mean, part of me wonders if Vince McMahon is this big bully who kind of looked at Jim Ross as the fat kid in school that you would throw in the locker, you know? Only, of course, these are grown men who are behaving this way, which is kind of scary. But it is the wrestling business. But the fact is, a shitty move by WWE to allow Jim Ross's contract to expire. And it's a shame because it affects all of us. I mean, the fans suffer. Michael Cole is atrocious. Todd Grisham is bland. Josh Matthews is not allowed to be himself. Matt Stryker is fucking terrible because he's not allowed to be himself. Stryker is actually a really good announcer, if he's allowed to be. But he's not. You know, I've talked about this before. You hear what comes out of his mouth, and you can't believe a word the guy says. You know, Jerry Lawler one of these days is going to pull down that strap and knock him on his ass. And I'll pop like crazy. The announced situation in WWE sucks. And Jim Ross may be almost 60 years old, but he's still the best that there is. Use him sparingly. Use him for pay-per-views. But Vince, you can't do it. You're either in or you're out. This whole Bret Hart deal being the exception. But for the most part, you're either in, full bore, or they're not going to use you on TV. And I think when it comes to Jim Ross, you can make an exception. Come to an agreement where Jim Ross is used for special occasions and let him do some of those outside business ventures. He's earned the right to do that. The man's been sick 3 times with Bell's palsy, for crying out loud. He's on the mend for the 3rd time now. He's been through a lot of shit. He had that cancer scare a couple of years ago. Has to put his TV on, probably sitting there with his wife at home in Oklahoma. And what does he see? He sees his boss in this ridiculous skit, one of the most ridiculous ones in the history of Raw, pretending to be a doctor. That's, of course, the infamous Dr. Heine skit, pulling things out of Jim Ross's ass, making fun of the fact that the guy may have had colon cancer. Real funny. And it just makes you shake your head. So who's to say how the Jim Ross situation is going to turn out? He may well reach an agreement with WWE. Would not shock me to see Jim Ross go somewhere else. Ring of Honor? I don't know about Ring of Honor, but could he be doing MMA shows on HDNet? Possible. Could he go to TNA? Possible. I don't know how likely it is. I think it's less likely after TNA did a 0.5 this past Monday. Bringing Jim Ross in, I think, would hardly change their fortunes, but it would be a huge coup. I know there's people in TNA actively trying to recruit Jim Ross, including Taz. People are working very hard. They think they have a shot to get him. And they certainly have a shot. How realistic that shot is, in my opinion, not so much. Could it be the end of Jim Ross in the wrestling business? Could very well be. He may be content to do some MMA, write a book, open another restaurant. Whatever he does, hopefully he will have much happiness because he deserves it. He's the best of all time at what he does. He deserves to be treated better. It's a shitty situation. WWE dropped the fucking ball on this. Hopefully they'll come to their senses. But this is Vince McMahon we're talking about. And so I don't really see that happening, unfortunately. But hopefully Jim Ross will do fine, whatever he ends up doing. He'll be happy and be able to kind of flip the bird to Vince McMahon and say, fuck you, see what you could have. Just a shitty situation all around. I'm very, very disappointed in the fact that they have not yet re-signed him. I finally had a chance to see Wrong Side of Town the other day. You may remember I talked about this many, many weeks back. It was this independently produced movie starring Rob Van Dam and Dave Bautista. It's a little misleading. You'll see Bautista on the cover art for the DVD. It's really a vehicle for RVD. He is the protagonist in this movie who is out for a night with his wife and their new neighbors. Bad things ensue. Basically, his wife is raped or nearly raped by somebody at a club who turns out to be somebody kind of important, connected to a bad person. And this person is accidentally killed. And that person's brother, of course, must now seek revenge on the man who killed his brother, that being RVD. And it kind of goes from there. Bautista is actually in the movie very, very briefly. It's actually very disappointing because Rob Van Dam in this movie is okay at best. His acting is just horrible. But it's basically Rob Van Dam being Rob Van Dam. He's being himself. So I can't knock him too much. As an actor, he doesn't really have a lot of range. He's pretty bad in that department. But Bautista blew me away in this movie. I'm not saying it was an Oscar-worthy performance, but Bautista was really fucking good in this movie. He basically has three, maybe four different scenes, and he steals the show in every single one of them. Obviously, he has a unique look. Not too many people look like Big Dave, with the muscles and the tats and the bald head and the weird-looking face. Hopefully, he doesn't hear me say that. But, like, just delivering his lines and the pacing, and he did a really good job in this movie. I was really surprised, I have to say. And I'm actually disappointed now that WWE took him off that Killing Karma movie and he's leaving the company. But hopefully he'll you know, continue his acting career. I think there's potential there with Bautista. I really mean that. There's another wrestler, by the way, in this movie. You might know him. Nelson Frazier, who, of course, was King Mabel and Big Viscera. Has a very, very brief role in this movie in a gas station scene. But, you know, just a weird movie. Kind of random. It just kind of came out of nowhere. It's on the surface, it's a pretty bad movie, but I have to tell you something. I had fun watching it. I really did. It's about 90 minutes long. It's not a terribly long movie. It's very campy. Very campy. But I liked it. I enjoyed it. And if you can want to pick it up on Netflix, if you want to download it from somebody, I would give it a thumbs-up recommendation. Check it out. It's pretty cool stuff. And Big Dave has a really, really good showing in this movie. Plus, Ja Rule gets shot in the head. So that's the biggest endorsement I can give this movie. That's the biggest reason to go see it. If you've been following me on Twitter, you would know that earlier this week, I was in an owner's box at a baseball stadium for a ball game. And one of the invited guests of the owner came into the box, looked kind of familiar to me, and was introduced to him, and I knew the name from somewhere, but I couldn't quite pick up on it, and then I realized who it was. Dr. Harvey Schiller, former Turner executive, who you may remember, I believe it was on an episode of WCW Monday Nitro, back in, I want to say 1999, somewhere in that time period during the Monday Night Wars, made at least one appearance on TV and fired, quote-unquote fired, Eric Bischoff. So he wasn't a supremely prominent figure, although I remember him being mentioned many times, but only making, I think, one appearance. So I thought that was kind of funny, and I was very tempted to to bring the subject up, but I thought the better of it. So I just thought that was kind of interesting, a, you know, somewhat key figure from the history of the now defunct WCW. obviously it's kind of interesting to see where these survivors ended up, all the different people. I would wonder where Jamie Kellner is these days. I don't know if he's still working for Turner or what he's doing. He's the guy that was brought in who hated wrestling and basically canceled WCW's television, which led to the death of WCW and Vince McMahon scooping up the assets. That was all on Jamie Kellner. I'd be interested to know what he's up to these days. You know, Ted Turner obviously is, you know, he's not directly involved in his own company anymore. I know he does a lot of philanthropic stuff, but yeah, thought that was kind of interesting. I've met a lot of very interesting people this week. I've shaken so many hands, my hand is like a Petri dish right now. But good week. Good week for the Solemn Monster. Hopefully a good week for all of you. I know it was because I got a lot of feedback from you guys, so we're going to open up the mailbag right about now. I've got a lot of different letters and notes and messages to get to here. Let's open this bad boy up. Now, remember, I want to thank all of you that have been writing in and mentioning either in the subject line or in the bottom, in the beginning, rather, of your emails to me, how long you've been listening to the Sound Off for or since what episode. So I want to say thank you to all the people that have been doing that. It's kind of cool to see the, you know, some people have been listening for a few weeks. Some people have been here since day one, which is pretty impressive. This person here has been listening since Sound Off 96. Dear Solemn Monster, what are your thoughts of having Triple H versus The Undertaker at WrestleMania 27? They had a dark match at the end of Raw last week when SmackDown was there. He said they were two of a dying breed and only room for one. Maybe they could go with that as a storyline heading into WrestleMania next year, since these two guys have a history with one another. Yeah, well, they certainly have a history with one another. And their WrestleMania 17 match is a fun match to go back and watch. Their King of the Ring match that year, not so much, or rather in 2002. But I don't really want to see it. Undertaker is on borrowed time. I've given up speculating on when he's going to retire because we hear this every single year. But he's moving so slow, and he just looks like he's in so much pain when he wrestles now. And I think the goal is to get to 20-0 and call it quits, which would be a good idea. So if he's got two opponents left at WrestleMania, you're not going to find anybody like Shawn Michaels. Seeing Shawn Michaels wrestle him twice, 2 years in a row, was fine with me. There really is nobody else like Shawn Michaels, though. I would rather see Undertaker face two completely fresh opponents that he's never been in the ring with before. I don't want to see him wrestle Kane again. I don't want to see him wrestle Triple H. Or if he does, not at WrestleMania. I would much rather it be somebody else. And again, you know who my pick is because I've said it before. He would be a heat magnet for the match. And that would be John Cena. I think Undertaker, John Cena, maybe they wait. It'll be the match where Taker goes 20-0. All the false finishes they could have, and I'm sure the people would just completely turn on Cena. It would be phenomenal television. So he would be my pick. Who the other opponent for Undertaker would be, I don't know. I would say this much, that if Sting was to leave TNA at some point, I would make a play for Sting, because I just think, even in 2010, 2011, I think the prospects of an Undertaker versus Sting match at WrestleMania would be huge. Just these two kind of, you know, mystical, more so Undertaker, but these mystical-type characters, two baby faces. Although, if you know, Sting came in, he may well be a heel, but I think that would be a cool match to have, for example, in Atlanta next year. You know, there's been talk of the Hall of Fame next year being all about WCW. They're in WCW's old stomping grounds. And if Sting is no longer in TNA, or if TNA is no longer around, which at this rate may not be too far behind, I would make a play for Sting. Get him in there, give him a Hall of Fame induction, make a DVD for him, and let him get in there with The Undertaker at WrestleMania. I don't think he would mind doing the job so much. I think there's a much better chance, for example, of seeing Sting and Undertaker as opposed to Undertaker and Goldberg. I don't think you're going to get Goldberg to come in and job to The Undertaker at WrestleMania. But Sting, I could see that happening. And then have the Cena match the year after and have The Undertaker ride off into the sunset. Or the darkness, as it were. I'm sorry. That would be my plan for The Undertaker. Here's an interesting question from Alex, who's been listening to the show since episode 47. Dear Solemn Monster, when a wrestler is let go from a contract in WWE, let's say he or she was on the 6 month of a 1 year deal, does WWE pay the rest of the contract or do they terminate it and that's that, minus the non-compete clause? What happens here? I'm not exactly sure how the system works. I've heard, but I've never confirmed it with anybody. Basically, just to give some clarity here, what is a downside guarantee? I looked it up to get a specific definition. And this is referring specifically to a WWE superstar contract. Basically, the downside guarantee is the amount of money that that person is guaranteed to make in a given year. So, for example, if you've got a Kofi Kingston who signs a contract with a downside guarantee of 100 grand per year, and business doesn't do too well, maybe their house show payoffs or pay-per-view bonuses aren't what they used to be, at the end of the year, WWE will count up all the money that that person has made, and if it does not equal their downside guarantee, they will get one lump sum for that amount. The downside guarantee is it covers them if they're injured. They'll be paid that amount of money as long as they don't violate the contract. So it's not like they're hurt and they're on the sidelines and they're not getting paid. The bigger star that you are, obviously, the more your downside guarantee is going to be. Without a union, this is the way it is. But that's basically the definition of what a downside guarantee is. Now, if, let's say, for example, we just had some stars get cut. If Shelton Benjamin, for example, who just got cut by WWE, had 6 months left on his contract, and they just let him go. They terminated it. Do they pay the rest of the contract? I don't believe so. I believe when they cut you, they cut you. I could be wrong about that, but that's what I am led to believe. Not the best situation to be in. But then again, a guy like Shelton, if he's saved his money and he's had some pretty good money years, and he's had some pretty decent, I'm sure, WrestleMania payoffs, his appearances in the Money in the Bank matches and all that, he's probably done pretty well for himself. I wouldn't cry, for example, for a guy like a Shelton Benjamin. But then again, you've got a guy like, let's say, Slam Master Jay. How much money could he possibly be making? And WWE turns around and cuts him. And they may well not have to pay whatever's left on that contract. Pretty shitty for a guy like that. The bigger star you are, the better off you'll be. Last part of Alex's email here. I'm from Tijuana, Mexico, and since you claim to have taken 6 years of Spanish in school, which I did, can you say something in Spanish to hear how you sound while saying it? Like, for example, and Alex here goes on to give me a phrase that basically says, my favorite wrestler from my youth was Hulk Hogan. He wants me to say this in Spanish. So here we go. This is a Sound Off exclusive right here. Mi luchador favorito de mi infancia era Hulk Hogan. I hope I said that right. My favorite wrestler from my youth was Hulk Hogan. That is true, by the way. That is a shoot. I did grow up a little Hulkamaniac, and, what can I say? You get smarter as you age, as they say. Paul from Dublin, Ireland writes in, wants to follow up on one of my comments from the last show, episode 107, regarding title belts. Question number one, do I have any myself? If so, which ones do I own? I actually do own one, believe it or not. I've always been a belt mark, you might say, but I don't collect them. I like looking at them. I think there are belt designs, for example, that I prefer over others. For example, all of the old ones over most of the newer ones. But when they first started selling the real replica belt from the Figures Inc., I think was the company that was making them. And I'm not talking about the shitty little, Velcro foam ones. I'm talking about the more realistic, heavier replica belts. That was around 2001. And I jumped on that as soon as I found out about it. So I plunked down my $200 or whatever it was, and I got myself a WWF Big Eagle World Belt. So it wasn't the old school Winged Eagle from the 80s and 90s. It was the one that came right after that Steve Austin and The Rock held. Pretty cool looking belt. Very big, very heavy. I've got it hanging on display. Again, I don't bring it with me when I go to a wrestling show. I'm going to be at the Nassau Coliseum on June 20th for Fatal 4-Way. I guarantee you I will not be walking into the Nassau Coliseum with my championship belt over my shoulder. Okay? Let that be a message to you guys out there. Not even the girls. Let the girls. The girls can get away with it. But the guys. Come on. I don't have a problem with owning a title belt. I think they're very cool. But to play with them, to take them to the show with you, and then sit in your seat, and everyone's all scrunched up, and you've got this gigantic title belt, it doesn't make sense. Why would you do that? Anyway, the second part of his question, if you had the opportunity to buy one or get one free, what would be your favorite one to choose? Would it be the old block version of it from the 80s and 90s? Would it be the World, the Intercontinental, the Undisputed? What would it be? I was not a big fan of the Undisputed belt, but it changed a little bit towards the end of its run. I remember when The Rock held the belt. Go back and watch when The Rock won the Undisputed Championship in the summer of 2002. He won the belt in a phenomenal triple threat match against Kurt Angle and The Undertaker. That belt was humongous. It looked just gargantuan. It looked really cool, actually. Compared to the spinner belt, I longed for the days of the Undisputed belt. But my favorite all-time belt design, without question, hands down, is the Winged Eagle from the late 80s and 1990s in WWF. That is the best belt that I have seen. There's been belts that are gaudier. There's been belts that are bigger. There's been belts that I really, really like. But none as much as that Winged Eagle, which, by the way, they do sell that now as a replica, but I just can't bring myself to spend that kind of money on another belt. But if I did, or if I got one for free, that would definitely be the one that I would pick. You know what? Again, part of it may be the fact that when I was younger, I grew up on that, so I have a soft spot in my heart for that particular title belt design. At the end of the day, none of this really matters all that much, of course, in the grand scheme of things, but just a beautiful belt to look at as compared to, say, the spinner belt or the United States Championship belt in its current incarnation, which looks like a toy. Not a big fan. Paul writes in, "Dear Solid Monster, I've always wondered where WWE keeps everything like the steel cages, the Elimination Chamber, Hell in a Cell, all the huge Titantrons. They must have 500 warehouses. They would need 50 of them for the WrestleMania 26 Titantron alone." They are pretty big. WWE has warehouses in a couple of different places. I know they have warehouses in Connecticut and New Jersey, and they store many of those things in there because it would just be impossible to keep them all in one place. Dear Solid Monster, this question comes from Barbara from Latvia. We have a fan in Latvia. That's a new one. I was just wondering if you're planning on turning heel anytime soon. By the way, this question came in before I made my WUW debut last night. Now, I was wondering if you're planning on turning heel anytime soon. My response to Barbara here, as I said to her, was Sound Off episode 124 is when I'm planning to turn heel. Because unlike WWE, I like the slow build to the big payoff. You got to make people want it. Brett writes in, "Dear Solid Monster, I think I know why SmackDown is staying on Friday nights instead of moving. It's because kids are allowed to stay up longer on a Friday night because they don't have school the next day. Also, it looks like they're gearing up on SmackDown for it to be a kid show with a lot of the younger talent." That has nothing to do with it at all. And I would hardly say, as I said to Brett in an email, I'd hardly say that a brand that features The Undertaker, Rey Mysterio, Big Show, MVP, Matt Hardy, and Christian, as talented as they all may be, consists or comprises a, quote, young roster. Undertaker, who's 45 years old, probably has the knees of a 65-year-old. Rey Mysterio has the knees of an 85-year-old. Big Show, who's, well, the Big Show, who's old and slow. MVP, who's actually no spring chicken himself. He's in his 30s. Matt Hardy, who's about 35 by now, I think, and getting, you know, rounder and more rotund by the day. And then Christian, Christian is awesome. And he's not an old man, but again, Christian's a guy who's been around for a long time. He's in his 30s. He's not a young guy anymore. So I don't get this whole, ooh, SmackDown is the brand for youth. I think Raw, more so than SmackDown after this draft, you can make the argument, is really the brand where a lot of the youthful guys are, not SmackDown. I mean, yeah, you've got people like Sheamus, and not even Sheamus. Sheamus is on Raw. You've got Drew McIntyre. You've got Dolph Ziggler. You know, a couple of other guys, but, you know, that's about it. This question comes from Justin here, who's been listening since episode 85. "Dear Solid Monster, obviously some sort of relationship was set up on Monday night involving Edge and Randy Orton, as Edge cost Orton his number one contenders match in the main event. The obvious reasoning would be that Edge and Orton are about to begin a feud, but I was wondering what you thought the chances were of Edge trying to keep Orton from singles competition in order to reform Rated RKO. On top of that, what do you think the idea of a reformation of Rated RKO? I realize this isn't likely, but it makes sense to me. Both Edge and Orton have turned babyface very recently, and I feel like turning one of them heel again this quickly for the sake of a feud is sort of irrational." Well, welcome to the wrestling business. You know, what else can be said? It's only been 1 week. We still don't know what Edge's motivations were. It looks like Edge will be the heel, and Randy Orton for now will be the babyface. Could they become a tag team again at some point in the future? Sure. I don't think that's where they're headed right now. To me, Edge and Orton, they're just two very talented guys that got put together as a makeshift team. Rated RKO was not a team long enough to where, even like Jericho and Big Show, You know, Jericho and Big Show made those tag team belts mean something, and quite frankly, they were together as a team for at least 6 months. I don't think Edge and Orton were even together for that long. So these people have fond memories of Rated RKO. You know, if you're a fan of Edge or Orton, I understand it, but as a team, they really weren't anything special because they just weren't a team for that long. So, could they be partners again? Sure. But right now, it looks like they're feuding, and, you know, what are my thoughts? It's something different. You know, Edge is the heel and Orton is the babyface, one-on-one in a feud, is something we haven't seen before. The last time we saw an Edge-Orton rivalry, it was the roles were reversed, but that was many years ago. So it kind of feels fresh, you know, but let's just see where they go with it. It's been 1 week. You know, obviously they're going to have to follow up on this on Monday night. Judging by Edge's actions during that segment with Christian on SmackDown when he started heeling on the fans, he's going to be a heel unless they change their mind again. And I think Edge works better in that role, quite frankly. I'm not sold on Orton as a babyface, but, you know, maybe he just needs to be paired off with a really strong heel, and maybe Edge is the right guy. Dear Solomon, sir, what can they do with John Cena that is fresh as far as his matches or feuds are concerned? We've seen Cena take on Orton, Triple H, Edge, Batista, Jericho, Sheamus, and Miz. How can they shake things up? I thought Orton couldn't take on Cena as long as Cena was champion. They're showing that they really miss Shawn Michaels. I think we all really miss Shawn Michaels, but... You know, CM Punk in the Straight Edge Society would be somewhat fresh for Cena, but he's on SmackDown, Punk is, so that's not going to happen. Now, the bottom line is, even if you turn the guy heel, which I've, you know, advocated before, he still has very few fresh matches. I mean, that's what happens when you're on top for 5 straight years. I mean, Hulk Hogan was champion that first time for 4 straight years. And even then, people were sick of him. I mean, go back and watch the main event. The night that he lost the belt to Andre the Giant on NBC. Look at all the people in the crowd who are just jumping for joy. You know? People just get tired of seeing the same thing after a while. 4 years, 5 years is a long time. Long time. I still think they should turn Cena heel, though. I really do. Lee writes into the podcast here, Dear Solomonster, do you think cage matches would be better off without the escape through the door option? It makes for bad spots, normally... mistimed ones, although does it not sound too easy? The referee opens the door and you can walk out, yet many can't manage to do it. When they do, they don't take the chance. Chris Jericho, for example, this past Sunday, which made him look stupid in his match with Edge. Keep up the good work. Well, I agree that a lot of guys look pretty goddamn foolish when they can easily step outside the cage, touch the floor, and they opt not to do so. But you know what? Using that logic, you could say that ladder matches should be done away with because of how ridiculous it looks when one wrestler is forced to climb slowly so they can't get knocked off. I mean, I have to say that you and I are in total disagreement on the issue of preferring cage matches that, you know, don't have the escape rule. I prefer cage matches that can be won only by escape, not by pinfall or submission. And I think if done correctly, they could be very dramatic. You know, and in my email here to Lee, I gave Bret vs. Owen Hart from SummerSlam 94 as the perfect example. To this day, that may be the greatest regular, you know, steel cage match I've ever seen. Bret vs. Owen at SummerSlam 94. But I also grew up on 80s, 90s WWF, living in the Northeast, where every type of cage match basically was escape the cage. That probably has skewed my viewpoint here. If you grew up on the NWA, for example... or on other territories or promotions that had cage matches where, by and large, you had to get pinned or submit in the cage, then your viewpoint would probably be different from mine. I think it's just a matter of personal taste. But I definitely prefer the escape cage matches because they're just more dramatic that way if they're done the right way. Adam's been listening to my voice since episode 62. My condolences. It's been a while since I've written Solomonster, but I've been listening... One thing I gotta know, what's the deal with TNA making a storyline revolving around Hall of Fame rings given by the competition? Monday's Impact had Ric Flair wrestling Abyss in a ring-versus-ring match, but I can't understand the logic of using WWE rings. Is there an actual wrestling Hall of Fame, or is WWE's version pretty much it? On a side note, I was wondering if you still find TNA's fans to be annoying, or do you find them to be less annoying now? First of all, there are several Wrestling Hall of Fames. None of them have the notoriety that WWE has, even though it's the only one that doesn't have an actual physical space. Basically, in a nutshell, it is a supremely dumb storyline that is the brainchild of a supremely dumb writing staff. They pretty much go hand in hand. And by the way, I did see that match with Ric Flair and Abyss last Monday, and it made me very sad. And yes, I still find TNA fans in the Impact Zone to be very annoying. And last but not least here, we have a very nice message from Chris in Winter Park, Colorado. Dear Solid Monster, huge fan of the podcast. First off, let me say I'm a recent subscriber on iTunes. I started listening with Sound Off 101, and since then I've spent much of my free time outside of work and study and friends searching for all of your old episodes. I found all of them dating back to October 2008. Very good stuff. Well, thank you. By the way, this is my first time writing into you, and I hope this makes it on the show. Well, I guess this will just make your day now, won't it? Anyway, what I wanted to talk about, I wanted to address my thoughts on the Fatal 4-Way pay-per-view, which I agree on paper, it sounds like a horrible pay-per-view concept. Next up on pay-per-view, WWE Emergency, featuring the ambulance match. Health insurance not required. Hey, don't give them ideas now. Come on. In all seriousness, I think this pay-per-view has the potential to be great for the following reasons. The world title matches are expected to be Fatal 4-Way bouts, obviously, but I think they will be Fatal 4-Way elimination matches, as they are more interesting than a one-fall-to-a-finish match if the right people are used. Let me stop you right there for a second. I don't know where you may have been given an indication of this. There is no indication that they will be elimination matches. I mean, maybe the main event will be an elimination match. WWE actually is not a fan of the traditional Fatal 4-Way elimination matches. Pretty much most, if not all, of the Fatal 4-Way matches they do are one fall to a finish. I mean, the one they did in the main event of WrestleMania 20, or rather WrestleMania 2000, left off a left off two zeros there. That was an elimination match, but I can't think of too many others that were elimination style. So let's not get ahead of ourselves here. That may not be what they're going for. Now, Chris continues here. Christian has his own poster for the event, leading me to believe that it's the start of a Captain Charisma push. Well, again, I wouldn't go too gaga over this just yet. WWE can be very generic sometimes with their pay-per-view posters, and of course, plans change from one day to the next. Vince McMahon has never been very high on Christian. He made him ECW champion, of course, and he tried to carry the brand, but does Vince McMahon see Christian as somebody who would compete for the world title? I would love to see it, but Vince McMahon's opinion of Christian, I don't know that it's really changed all that much since he was last in the company. Him being on a pay-per-view poster does not give me the confidence that this guy is going to be in the main event. I hope he makes it there. But again, that on its own, when you're talking about WWE, doesn't mean shit, unfortunately. So we're just going to have to see where they go with Christian. Again, Jack Swagger is a heel champion right now. He's going to be feuding with Big Show. When that program is over, assuming Swagger makes it out with the belt, who do you slot in there? Do you slot in The Undertaker, who actually has an argument for facing Swagger for the belt, because he beat him clean in a non-title match on Raw 2 weeks ago? Is it going to be Mysterio? I think Mysterio and Swagger would work really well together, actually. That's a fresh matchup right there. But Ray, you know, he's been putting off knee surgery since, God, probably late last year, if not early this year. He was supposed to wrestle through WrestleMania, then have an operation, and now it's over a month removed from WrestleMania. He's still wrestling. How much longer could he do that for, before going under the knife? Anyway, Chris goes on here to give his rundown of, I guess, the different Fatal 4-Way matches he would like to see. Very detailed email here. He seems to be very excited about this pay-per-view. I can't say that I'm overly excited. I'm excited enough that I bought tickets to the show, like I said. But that's just, anytime WWE comes to town for a TV taping or a pay-per-view, I'm inclined to buy a ticket if it's, you know, worth my efforts. I mean, I tried to get tickets for the show when it was $400 a seat, which I just laughed at, you know, uproariously, because anybody would be insane to pay $400 for a ticket to Fatal 4-Way. When I was able to get my ticket for $50, then it made sense to go to the show, and they're actually pretty good seats. But am I going to the show excited to see, you know, all the different Fatal 4-Way matches? Nah, not really. And maybe I do that on purpose, you know. I don't know, maybe I lower my expectations, so I'll enjoy the show more. I didn't have very high hopes going into the Bash, the Great American Bash in 08, when I went to the Coliseum last time for a pay-per-view show, and that show turned out to be, you know, okay. Maybe it was good. I don't remember it being a blow-away show. I'd have to go back and listen to the podcast I did after it, but, you know, it should be a good show. I'll be there. I hope it is a good show, since I'm going to be there. I'm going to be reviewing it for the podcast. Anyway, that's going to do it. Let me cinch up the mailbag here. Thank you, as always, for all your letters, and keep sending them on in. And again, if you can just put in there somewhere how long you've been listening, since what episode, if you can remember, that would be kind of cool to include in there. TheSolomonster@gmail.com is the email address. As always, TheSolomonster@gmail.com. You could follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Solomonster. Again, we are creeping up closer and closer to 500 followers, and you know, there may be something special in store if you happen to be the 500th follower. So get on there if you're not already on there. And of course, you can subscribe to the show in iTunes for free. It doesn't cost you anything, even though it should. And every time there's a new episode, it will be automatically downloaded to, I guess, your computer, whatever folder you designate. Very easy, very simple. Definitely get on iTunes. So that's going to do it. I want to give one more quick plug here to my good buddy, Amish Cousin Simon. Again, congratulations on making your wrestling debut last night. Had a fun time after the show celebrating the occasion. We had some very deep wrestling discussion at the bar after the show. That would have been great material for a podcast had I thought about that in advance. Maybe we'll try to get him on the show too, maybe do a little interview and splice it in here. It might be interesting to hear the opinion of somebody who's just breaking into wrestling. And you know, Johnny Rods has changed, you know, trained a lot of people that are known. Matt Stryker, Taz, the Dudleys, a whole bunch of other people. And, you know, maybe just get his perspective on things. By the way, if you want to check it out, it is kind of funny. This is the joy of doing the Amish character that he is doing. You can go to their website, wuwonline.com, I believe is the website. And the website's going to be redone shortly, but there'll be some promos that link to YouTube. And so WUW Hype Episode 10 is the title. It was just posted on the 29th, and the beginning of the video has the Amish people, yes, the Amish people in the skit on the website, WUW Hype Episode 10. You could check them out there. Cyrus and Simon featured in that video. It's pretty funny stuff. Funnier than probably half the comedy WWE does half the time. So check that out. Good weekend. Lots going on. Lots coming up this week as well. We'll be back next weekend, episode 109. We're chugging along here. No rest for the weary. Until next time, thanks for your support. Be well. Stay safe. We'll see you next week. Take it easy, guys.
You've been listening to The Solomonster.
You know, I really just don't understand what they're doing.
Anybody agree with me out there?
I mean, anybody. Come on, throw me a bone here.
Probably the single dumbest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
God, I love this business.
On SE Scoops.